Welcome, everyone, to episode 360 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we've got a loaded episode for you today. We have a special guest on to discuss the latest about the Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo. We will also talk about what's next for the Houston Rockets now that they are out of the playoffs, and we will give our predictions for Game 7, yet another Game 7 of Clippers Nuggets that is later tonight. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is a guy who has to play nice with our resident Bucks fan, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It's going well, Brian. I think for the first time in my life, I've experienced failing upwards because I was actually invited to a comedy / football podcast and football, European football, the right kind of football. And I know nothing about comedy or football. So actually going on that show, you know, I have to assume that's just me failing upwards, which I'm not going to lie. It feels delicious, even though it also, you know, feels slightly wrong. It's a very, very weird situation to be in.
You got to fake it till you make it, right?
I guess so. And I faked it really good.
Man, that feels like a perfect, that's what she said, but I will leave that alone for now. Instead, I'm going to introduce our special guest. We have Ty Windisch, the host of the Eurostep podcast. Ty, how's it going, my man?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's hard to follow a perfectly executed, that's what she said, but I'll do my best to not be too much of a letdown from that.
Good. Before we get underway, could you let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work?
Absolutely. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, pretty much most platforms. Just my name, Ty Windisch, T-I-W-I-N-D-I-S-C-H. Otherwise, my, I guess, quote-unquote claim to fame, maybe not the strongest claim, but I'm one of the hosts of the Eurostep podcast. That is G-Y-R-O Step. Obviously covering, maybe not obviously, but covering all things Milwaukee Bucks, named after Giannis. And before anybody asks, no, I don't know if we'll change it if something terrible happens with Giannis. I know we'll get there in a minute, but we're not gonna be, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy and make a plan for that. We're just gonna ignore it, and we'll cross that bridge. Hopefully, never.
Yes, we will definitely get there. I mean, you know, I was telling you before we started that we discussed the Bucks last week, but I think especially, you know, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN came out with this report yesterday that the Bucks co-owner and governor Mark Lazary met with Giannis in a 3-hour lunch meeting, which just sounds effing miserable. 3-hour meeting, but to discuss, you know, basically what's next for the team. He said they are willing to spend into the luxury tax, which I know was somewhat of a question given their moves last off season. But the first thing I got to ask, Ty, because this was, you know, the first thing that Morten and I talked about last week was the future of Mike Budenholzer. Obviously, you know, a very rough series for him against the Miami Heat, but based on Woj's report, and there have been a few other reports suggesting that his job status is not in danger. He is expected to return next year. What do you think about that?
Not much that's fit for, you know, a podcast of this moral and intellectual standing. No, you know, it's not great. I think it's very much not great. And it's one of those where, you know, there's a lot of reasons that you could and the Bucks will posit as why it's good to keep Bud around. I mean, you know, most wins in the NBA, 2 regular seasons in a row, got them to the conference finals and then not quite there this year. You know, players around the org seem to like him. He's a respected coach who just happens to, you know, his one weakness is the most important time of the year, which seems bad to me. But so yeah, there's all these quote unquote positives that are going to be thrown out there, but just based on, I mean, what we all saw the last 2 postseasons, I think this one is even worse than the last one. I think the Bucks failed even harder this year. I mean, I think it goes without saying. I mean, you lose in 5 in the second round. It's, as the number one seed, that, correct me if that hasn't happened in a very, very long time. You know, I know ESPN Stats and Info always trots out the exact last time or if it never has, but it was a collapse, the magnitude of which we've not seen in quite some time. And it just feels so evident that I don't know if I want to say he's not ready for the playoffs. I just think the way Bud believes in coaching and believes that, you know, you have to play pretty much everybody and you can't adjust too far away from what got you there and yada, yada. You know, I don't think he's dumb. I don't think he doesn't realize that these things have cost him. I just think his belief in them is so steadfast that that's what's going to keep on happening. But it doesn't work. I mean, it just doesn't work. This is a results-based league. I think it has to be at this level with so much at stake for the Bucks. We already kind of mentioned this guy named Giannis is a little bit important to the franchise. And I just think, and a lot of Bucks fans as well think, you know, it's past due. You give him the pass for last year. Maybe shouldn't have even done that, but I mean, it's year one. He's still getting used to coaching superstars. You know, he's got to deviate from his system for the first time. He's making all this progress. And then it was all gone in the moments it mattered most. Again, none of that stuff ended up being true. None of the lies that we had told ourselves enough to start to believe them ended up being true. So I just think personally, I don't think he's a terrible coach, but I don't think he's a coach that's going to get this team to a championship. I think that should be the only goal right now and the immediate goal. It's not, you're not building toward anything. You should be there. You have Giannis in his prime. You can't waste away these years anymore. And we've seen, you know, whether it's Nick Nurse or Steve Kerr, some of these even first-year coaches, if not a guy like Ty Lue, who's still out there, but some of these first-year coaches have come in, and if they're the right person for the job, they can get the job done. And I think the Bucks need to explore one of those directions. I don't think you can waste another year, you know, hoping that the Bud thing doesn't happen again. It feels like a fool's errand to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, Mort, I don't want to speak for you, but I think that's where you were with Bud coming into this postseason. It was like, all right, I know his reputation, but, you know, let's give him a chance this year to prove that it's wrong. And then he very much did not do that.
Right. No, and in multiple ways, it was not, like, it's not even just that he plays however many guys. It's that, like, the Bucks strategically were wholly unprepared for the wall that Miami built. And that's, again, like, they shouldn't have been unprepared when Toronto did this. Like, this was always going to be, I mean, if you ask anyone who spends a lot of time watching, covering the NBA, whatever, what are you going to do to stop Giannis? You don't let him get to the rim. I mean, that's where he lives. That's what you want to do to stop his team. It was unacceptable that the Bucks had really no answer for that when Toronto did it. But now, a whole year later, when all we heard from the org and the players and everyone is, you know, Giannis is dreaming about Marc Gasol's help defense, literally, maybe nightmares, not dreaming. But, like, this is the goal. Like, we know what's going to happen. We know we need to overcome this philosophy. And they couldn't do it. Plus the rotations, plus, you know, Chris not playing 40 minutes until game four or whatever it was. It's so many things snowballing. And I just think at the end of the day, I don't know how you look at the whole run and go, this is the guy we trust to not inexplicably do all these same things again a year from now for no other reason than hopefully.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, so now, you know, assuming he's back based on, again, all the reports that we've heard so far, what do you think can change? Like, do you think they, you know, does Mark Lazary sit down with Bud for a 3-hour lunch meeting and say, like, hey, buddy, you know, we didn't play Giannis like 30, more than 32 minutes during the season for a reason. He could play 40 game one of the playoffs of an important series. Do you think there's an assistant coach they can bring in that they're, you know, someone who's experienced that can push back on Bud more and challenge him to come up with more creative counters for, you know, the inevitable wall that teams are going to build for Giannis? Like, what do the Bucks do on the coaching level? Or is it really just hope he changes?
I hope that's not what it is. But again, I mean, if it's up to me, you don't even put yourself close to this position. I think the tricky thing with, you know, and I've seen this idea floated a lot, especially, you know, if your assumption is that the Bucks don't want to pay two head coaches for the next 2 years, which is what you have to do if you fire Bud. I think he has 2 more years guaranteed for however much, you know, a lot of money to normal people, not a lot of money to billionaires. But, you know, the assistant thing sounds nice, right? Like, you probably don't have to pay him as much, and Bud's still around. You're not, quote unquote, wasting that money, whatever. I think this is all ridiculous when you're at the level the Bucks are at, but I digress. There's a lot of head coaching jobs right now. So I don't know. It feels to me like most guys who you would really want to do that will probably be able to find their own job. I mean, maybe someone's really interested in it. I'm not really sure. The Bucks are going to have holes. I mean, they lost Taylor Jenkins last year, who was an assistant who went to coach the Grizzlies. I think Darvin Ham has had some interest. Some teams have been interested in him. So we'll see. The Bucks might have more holes to fill. Maybe they can bring in someone accomplished like the Clippers did with Ty Lue. But again, if I'm Ty Lue, I want the head coaching job of the Bucks. I don't want the assistant coaching job, which he had to do this year anyway. So we'll see. But I would really hope they try to do something if they're going to keep him, whether it's a conversation on how he needs to coach, which again, he seems pretty steadfast in his ideas to me, but who knows? Or bringing in an assistant to help formulate some of the strategy and all that. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. We haven't seen anything that says anything but he'll be coming back. It seems like the focus is more on the roster right now, which I think could help. But I don't know. I think coaching was probably the biggest issue. At least one of the biggest two issues on display with the Bucks against Miami.
For sure. So let's get into the roster now. We're going to assume that Giannis does not sign the Supermax, just hypothetically, but he doesn't tell them, like, I'm demanding a trade this offseason. So, you know, they will go into this offseason, presumably, attempting to tweak the supporting cast somehow to better support Giannis and get them to that championship level. What would you like to see them do?
So I'm kind of worried. Excuse me. They've backed themselves into a corner. I'm not sure how many options they really have besides the Chris Paul button. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to end up getting surprisingly expensive for the Bucks. It's one where I kind of was against the same move last year. And obviously now, you know, Chris Paul, another year older, I think still good. I mean, still very, very good in the playoffs, but you know, it's another year. Who knows what this next season, when or what this next season will look like, yada, yada, yada. But CP3, I think, is that the veteran voice they need. I think the Bucks really looked complacent and unorganized at times. I think he would help with that. I think they could use any point guard who's not named Eric Bledsoe. people will point out Chris Paul's foibles in big moments before. He's got nothing compared to Bledsoe in that regard. He's obviously a much better shooter than Eric Bledsoe. I think just spacing wise, Bledsoe, Giannis, and then sometimes Brooke Lopez, whose shot comes and goes, can be really tricky for the Bucks. So I think spacing it would help. I think he gives them the kind of annoying attitude they need. I think the Bucks kind of need someone who will punch somebody in the dick from time to time. And that's on his resume. It's Chris Paul is known for that. So I think he could bring that edge that would help. He's also very, very good. Hopefully that stays true. But I think like Philly is going to poke around there as well. And I think the Philly has more picks to trade. The Bucks platter that they got back from Malcolm Brogdon just was really not looking appetizing at all right now. It's the 24th pick in this draft and 2 seconds. The Bucks can't trade their own first until 2024, maybe 2025, depending on protections to another pick. So they don't have a ton of – I mean, they can give OKC a lot of cap relief, but it's going to be tough. I'm really hoping it doesn't cost Dante DiVincenzo. But I almost like – I mean, I guess I can ask you guys while I'm here, but I don't know who else out there is like a proven enough player that and an attainable player. Like they're not getting Beal. They're not getting – Booker or some of these other guys that Bucks fans are pining for. That's not happening. I don't know who else is out there though who could even come close. I think Chris Paul maybe gets you there. I don't know who else would even be around to do it.
Yeah, no, I've been thinking about this a lot because I'm of the opinion that the Bucks need to get younger. I do not understand why they would actively want to get older, because you're just basically setting Giannis up to be further disappointing. Because like you just said, If you get Chris Paul, I understand like all the accolades and whatnot, but it's a year longer. It's a year down the road, and maybe even a year and a half because of the coronavirus. We just don't know what kind of state he'll be in at that point in time. We have no idea. We've seen NBA players from one off season to the other just take that step down, both athletically and playing wise, and just like mentally out of it, and where they just regress. And what if you trade for Chris Paul and that happens? Like then you're completely stuck, and then everything just has to go sideways. I think you just need to basically push the button of going younger. But like you asked, who's out there? Who's attainable? You might have to actually trade for someone where the value doesn't align, where you have to sacrifice some value, and that doesn't make you better necessarily. So I think it's an extraordinarily interesting conversation that they need to have amongst themselves in terms of which route they're going to be taking for next year.
Yeah, one guy I pointed out was like, and this is such, everything is such a gamble now. The Bucks have put themselves in the bad position of, I mean, like you said, Chris Paul, I don't disagree with you at all. It's an incredible risk, but I think that's where they're at when like they're at this weird crossroads of they need to contend immediately to keep Giannis. I assume just for the, I don't think he's going to sign the Supermax between COVID concerns and how terrible Milwaukee looked in the bubble. I don't think he signed it. I think it makes sense to kick the can down the road as difficult of a spot as that puts the Bucks in. But that's where they're at. They don't have any youth outside of Dante, who's 23 and like fine. I think he's good. I don't think he's, I don't know. We'll see. I think he's got some potential, but again, he's not 19. He's 23, but he's still on his rookie deal and all that. They don't really have any other youth. They've lost most of the players that have come through their pipeline, like Christian Wood and Dragan Bender, who people always laugh at Dragan Bender. He's coming along a little bit with the herd, but he's gone now. That's like they lost a lot of their quote unquote youth. They've, you know, biffed almost every draft pick except for DiVincenzo. It's tough, and you kind of have to take a risk. You know, I was talking in the last Eurostep, like Dennis Schroeder, a guy who looked like he really came around, and he's only got 1 year left. Maybe you get him from OKC instead. I feel like OKC is pretty much selling everybody not named Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, maybe Lou Dort now, and Darius Bazley this year. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's any other clean answer, and I do think for what their goals are this season, Chris Paul makes sense. But yeah, I mean, after that, then Giannis probably will look around and say, it's me, 30-year-old Chris Middleton, and who?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Morton and I talked about this the last episode with the Raptors. If they decide to go in a different direction and Kyle Lowry's available, he's probably the best you could hope for. I don't know if the Raptors would realistically say, okay, yeah, we'll give you Kyle Lowry and set up this – potential dynasty for the next 5 years, but that's an option. I mean, you know, Buddy Hield is a guy that's kicked around on Sixers Twitter a lot. I don't know that he necessarily moves the needle for the Bucks, because I think, Ty, you're right, the point guard spot is really the place I'd be looking to upgrade the most. I'm going to preface this by saying this has been a Chris Middleton stan podcast since it started 4 years ago, so I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but, you know, I'm wondering if that's kind of the answer. You know, if we, Mort and I, when we talked about the Bucks a few episodes ago, we said like, all right, if, you know, if Brooklyn is really looking for this third star, would they consider Chris Middleton to be that guy? And could you get some combination of LeVert, Allen, Dinwiddie in exchange for him? Would that move the needle for the Bucks?
I don't know. I mean, it's a really big bet on Caris LeVert, who I like and who looked great in the bubble, but still has not become a functional three-point shooter. And I think, I mean, that's been pointed to as a potential issue with the Nets, but I think it's a lot easier to make up for that with, you know, Kyrie and KD on the floor than it is with Giannis on the floor. I like Allen. I think he's a fine center. I think the issue, kind of, one of the issues for the Bucks is their third best player right now is Brooke Lopez. And Giannis is half center, right? Like Giannis, and I think that's a kind of an intrinsic issue with the Bucks that they don't really acknowledge and haven't probably done enough acknowledging. You know, what if Giannis has the ball too much? Like, what if Giannis should be off ball more, both like cutting and posting up and also rolling? And it's much easier to do that. I mean, Brooke plays stretch five. That's the whole point. But again, it's inconsistent. So like, I know there's been some in our Euro group Discord, there's been one fan in particular, one great listener of the show, great community member there, keeps trying to like flip Brooke Lopez for like Robert Covington or Buddy Hield or something like this. And who knows? Trade talks are so difficult to do because you never know how teams look at players. Blah, blah, blah. But I don't hate the idea, honestly, of like just getting a stopgap center. And because like I think in most of your best lineups, Giannis at the five works just fine. You don't want to do it all year for the Anthony Davis reason, but I think it makes sense in the big moments. But then, if that's how you look at it, Jared Allen is like, okay, useful, but I don't, maybe not a necessity. And Dinwiddie's good. Dinwiddie's fine. I don't know. It's good starter. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would do that if I'm the Bucks, but I think this is something, and you'd far from insulted me by positing like maybe Chris has to move. I think the nice part about the CP3 option is I think you can get him without giving up Chris. I think he's probably the best like player for the 2020-21 year that you can get to pair with those two. I think it would have to be a substantially better player than at least younger or as good as Chris Paul for me to want to give up Chris as well, because then that's even more of a gamble. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It depends who's out there. You know, I don't know if I'd do it for that package. If the right package is there, though, I would certainly consider it. I think everything should be on the table right now.
Yeah. I mean, and Ty, you're singing my music right now in terms of actually turning Giannis more into a roller and actually having the ball less, because that's been a theme on this podcast over the past couple of weeks. The fact that he's just doing too much and essentially playing like a point guard. And I think that also has to carry into like every sort of trade conversation that they have, because the Bucks internally have to figure out at some level also, you know, how do we optimize Giannis? Like against Miami, they gave him the ball after a rebound, Giannis would just take the ball off the glass and he would drive straight, you know, all the court wise and just go straight into a wall and either offensive foul or a turnover. And it was just a dumb play through and through. And I think the Bucks also have to just pivot into, you know, the X's and O's obviously, and say, how do you use him better? Because if you find a way to utilize him optimally, then that changes your entire conversation of who you have to get.
Yeah, and I think not one of the worst, I mean, the worst part is losing in the second round and not trying to go to the finals. But one of the other bad parts about Bud's performance against Miami and against Toronto last year as well, like, people are going to assume Chris Middleton's not the guy. Maybe he's not. He was madly inconsistent again, although some good things, some bad things in the series. Certainly not good enough overall in the playoffs or in the Heat series. But he certainly had some moments too, won them a game. The Bucks did not seek out nearly enough Chris Giannis pick and roll in that series, partially because they just don't do that for, you know, shrug shoulders over and over again until I dislocate them both. I don't know why. They just don't do it that much. Yeah. Part of it, though, in that series, I think Nikias Duncan was one of the very smart people to point this out early. Miami just, like, they guarded those two with, you know, somewhat malleable players, and they just switched it, and the Bucks like, had no idea what to do because, again, They don't run this enough to know what to do if one simple obstacle is thrown in their path. They have no experience. They just look lost out there. So I would have loved to see, and it took them until like game four to realize, oh, like if we do Chris Middleton, like George Hill screening actions, we can get Goran Dragic on Chris and then cook. This series is basically over by this point, but they never got to a point of doing that and then running the Chris Giannis pick and roll and actually throwing a mismatch. They don't hunt anything on the court that way, which is frustrating. So like the question basically I'm saying that we don't know the answer to is, do you need to find a pick and roll initiator much better than Chris Middleton, or can he do it? You know, I think if you lean that yes, you do, I certainly see where you're coming from. I think maybe my answer for a long time has been you might just not be able to find anyone better at this point. So you kind of have to make do. But right. I don't know if we know still, which is just maddening because, again, there's not a lot of time at play here for the Milwaukee Bucks as it pertains to Giannis's long-term future. But I think like a Chris Paul guy would be an obvious like, okay, he's going to be – I think Chris is fine. I think he'd be much better at navigating those pick and rolls with Giannis. I think that should be a big priority for the Bucks is – you know, it's not easy to tell a two-time reigning MVP, hey, handle the ball less. Mm-hmm. Hey, do traditional center stuff more. I mean, no big guys want to play like big guys anymore. I think there's a reason. It's not glamorous. It's not, you know, you don't have a quote-unquote deep bag if you're rolling to the rim. I think a guy like Chris Paul, though, on the other end of the action, I think it becomes a lot easier to convince Giannis to do that. I'm not saying Giannis is a bad teammate. We haven't heard anything from Giannis about this. I've been mulling this over a lot. How much does he want to handle the ball? I would think a lot.
Yeah, I think I said this in our last episode even. I think the Bucks and Giannis are in a similar spot with the Sixers and Ben Simmons. And not to say Ben Simmons is as talented as Giannis. He is not. Giannis is, you know, far better than Ben Simmons is. But, you know, they're coming to this realization like, okay, these guys can handle the ball, and you know that makes them especially dangerous in transition. But you know, Giannis is a more willing shooter than Ben Simmons, obviously, because so is everyone in the NBA. But you know, it's still not like teams are going to concede that shot. Like, how do you make Giannis effective in the half court when he's, you know, when he's not running, or when he's running into that wall? If he runs into that wall, what happens? Like, how do you figure out how to use him? And that, you know, that's the same thing with the Sixers and Ben. And I think the answer for both of them really might be just, you know, as you said, move them off the ball, use them as cutters? Use that, you know, are they going to command a lot of defensive attention if they're standing in the corner? Maybe not, but, you know, figure out how to use that to your advantage. Like, if you can get them to cut off the ball and an opponent has lost track of them because they're like, oh, okay, we're going to ignore these guys, then you've got, you know, a 6'10 guy running to the center of the, or running toward the basket that should be an easy alley-oop opportunity or something like that. So it's, I think, more, you were spot on there saying, you know, when we're talking about trade and draft and all this stuff, we need, you know, the first question for the Bucks this offseason, just like the first question for the Sixers, is like, how do we take advantage and build around these guys? Because if we don't do that, then you end up with a roster like what the Sixers currently have.
Exactly. And by the way, I am really trying to holster my Giannis to Dallas takes right now. I am really just...
I'm sure Ty appreciates that.
I do. I mean, I think they might sweep the playoffs a couple of times. I mean, I think if you look at the two players, I mean, obviously, Luka. I guess I almost joked and said like Boban, but that'd be fun too. A Boban Giannis lineup would be a lot of fun. But if you look at Luka and Giannis, and you know, you asked, like, if you drew up like the theoretical best fit for both guys, I think it's the other one, right? Like, I think they complement each other perfectly. Giannis's jumper being a little better helps, I guess, and Luka's too. But I think they're both adding to their games. And I think everything that Giannis does that KP doesn't makes him such an even better fit. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys this, but the Mavs with Dwight Powell on, who is a limited shooter, were so good because of how well he rolls to the basket. And Giannis is like, you know, everything Dwight Powell does, Giannis does it like the umpth degree. So, yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. They'd sweep the playoffs a bunch. It's not out east. I will say, I'll throw you this bone. If he has to go somewhere, if he goes to Dallas and they win a bunch with Luka, there's worse outcomes for me. I wouldn't hate it too much. It'd be fun basketball to watch at the very least.
Oh, that's impressive. That I like that. I like someone who's willing to just go out and say that instead of just being, you know, oh, we need to keep this guy regardless. I love the fact that you can sidestep it and just go, hey, great basketball. That's nice. Yeah. I appreciate that.
They need to keep him regardless, but it would also be great basketball. Two things can exist.
For sure. And to be fair, I think Giannis ultimately ends up staying. I think Euros in particular, you know, being one myself as well, there is a different way of thinking about, you know, the NBA as a whole. There is a deeper sense of loyalty to teams, I think, at least when you look at it from, you know, for example, a perspective of Dirk Nowitzki and Tony Parker, you know, even though he left in the final year, and Manu Ginobili, even though he's Argentinian, but it's just a different way of looking at team building. So I'm still inclined to say that he stays.
I hope so.
So Ty, I think I want to wrap up on this question. And again, I'm sorry to even ask it, but, you know, hypothetically, let's say Giannis does not sign the Supermax this off season, but doesn't say definitively, like, I'm not re-signing. Do you think the Bucks have to at least be open to trade offers? Not saying they are like actively shopping him, but, you know, willing to listen.
I've given this a lot of thought because I've had an opinion for a long time on this particular question, thinking we could end up getting here, now thinking, you know, basically we are going to be here. And I genuine thought, I think after my Dallas answer, I'm on this platform of being fairly reasonable as much as you can be, you know, obviously growing up in Milwaukee and rooting for one team, blah, 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 blah. I think no. I think you hang up the phone on every single offer. Aside from, I think there's certain things that franchises do to position themselves better, whether it's like the Kobe contract or giving Dirk, you know, all that money in his last few years. I think there are some things you just probably shouldn't do from an around the league standpoint that can really kind of tank your credibility as an org. Like, I think the Sixers had to make some dramatic anti-Hinkie moves to get themselves out of a similar space of, like, you know, if agents just say, like, we won't let anyone go there, it can be very detrimental to your organization. I think it's a terrible look, but even more concrete than that, even more bare bones, if you trade for, you know, 3 picks and 2 swaps and 2 nice young players, whatever it is, whatever the offer is, do you have a better chance winning over the next decade with said Platter or with, you know, 2-time reigning MVP, reigning DPOY, Giannis turning 26? And I think the answer is Giannis. I don't think there's any package, any, you know, feasible package in the league that gives you a better chance statistically of winning a title. And I think that should be the goal. I think, you know, sustained winning is nice. I don't think you can look at a chance to win a title legitimately and turn it away. I don't think you should ever do that. I think it's so hard to even get close that if you're close, you should just go for it no matter what. So I don't think you trade him for anything unless he specifically is like, I don't want to play here. I want to go now. I think even if he says I'm leaning toward leaving, but I'm still going to come and play and give it 100%. And I think it goes without saying that Giannis is not going to phone in a year. I really hope. I don't think based on everything he's about that he would do that. I think you go for it. I think you ride it out, you know, one last dance and you try your best. You pitch him your best to keep him. You say everything you need to say, but I think you got to go for it. I think scared money doesn't make none. I think if you trade him now, you're due the mediocrity you're going to have for such a long time. I think you really, you need to make him force his way out. I don't think you can't hand away a Giannis. You just, it's not done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. There's no way, even with only a year left on his deal, you know, some teams would be worried. Oh, are we going to give up this much for a rental? So you're not going to get equivalent value for what he brings to your team. And as you said, as long as he doesn't definitively say, I'm definitely leaving next offseason, then in theory, you still have a chance to retain him. Like there's not, you know, I don't think the Bucks are far away from a championship right now. Like, I don't know if a change in coach necessarily means they're, you know, they're definitely going to win the title next year. And I don't think they're going to change their coach. So like, I don't know if whatever moves they make this offseason means they'll definitely win a title next year, but they could. And, you know, I think if you ask any Raptors fan, like, do you regret not trading Kawhi Leonard at last year's deadline, knowing that he could leave last summer? They will say no, because we won a championship, but we don't care that he left for nothing. That's fine. Like, we're still riding high. And I mean, look at the confidence that, you know, trickled over to this year. And like, that Raptors team now just has to be viewed in an entirely different light. So yeah, it's a tough situation, but I think, you know, the comments that came from that Giannis right after the Bucks lost had to be encouraging, where he says, you know, he's not going to demand a trade. And, you know, some people see a wall, I'm going to go around and I'm going to break through it. So it does sound like Giannis doesn't have wandering eyes quite yet, but, you know, we'll see what happens over the next year. It's going to be easily the most fascinating subplot of the off season. And, you know, I speak from a content creator perspective when I say, I hope he does not sign the Supermax just so we all have jobs for the next year. but for your sake, I hope it does not end as messily as, you know, LeBron in 2010, Kevin Durant in 2016, so on and so forth.
Well, there's another wrinkle here that we seem to be forgetting. And that's also just how Giannis would return to the season if he's not engaged. I mean, look, if he came back and basically acted like Joel Embiid did this year, just mentally checked out, knowing full well that this would be Giannis's last year of his contract, even though he didn't voice his opinion on the matter, you know, you could sort of read in between the lines. So that's also an aspect that goes into this thing, because the Bucks will look at him every single day over an extended period of time. And, you know, they would have so much more information than the three of us in terms of understanding, you know, he doesn't seem like he's in it. Like, it doesn't seem like he's might as motivated, or, you know, the other way around. Like, if he looks motivated, if he looks like the same guy as always, then that could be taken as a sign of optimism. So I think that plays into the part as well. If he comes in, moans, is just not engaged, then you can pick up the phone and listen to offers. But if not, then you hang up on people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think we're going to see the Anthony Davis, that's all folks, t-shirt catastrophe or anything like that.
I agree.
I just, again, we all could be wrong. You never know. But that's just my read. And I think it's encouraging that he's having these 3-hour lunches. Now, I also want to correct something you said earlier. You groaned at a 3-hour meeting, and sure, but it's a 3-hour lunch meeting. And if there's food throughout, like, it might not be that bad.
That's true.
But I think it's good to see Giannis. It seems like he's kind of prodding Bucks ownership, like, hey, we need to do some stuff. And that to me sounds like, and of course, you know, the rumor came out and everyone ran away and posted their Raptors and Warriors and Heat. And I haven't seen enough Mavericks shops. The Mavericks people got to get on the Photoshops, but I saw all the Photoshops on Twitter and Instagram and all that. But I think I interpret it as he's trying to say, these are the things we need to do to be competitive. And that's all that he wants to win. He wants loyalty and he wants to win. And Thanasis is there and the Bucks have been good. They need to be better. So I think it's a positive. I think he's still, you know, trying to get more out of the org. I think it's good that he's even willing to go to this extent and not just say like, all right, I'll take my next destination now. But now the Bucks have to come through and there's a lot of pressure, but that's the spot they're in and they got to be better.
Well, Ty, thank you again for joining us today. This was a lot of great insight. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate, you know, getting kind of the firsthand view of what's going on in Bucksland right now. But please, one more time, let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work.
Absolutely. The Eurostep podcast, anywhere you download podcasts, Apple, Spotify, the big ones, but I'm pretty sure it's all over for all things Bucks. So that's G-Y-R-O Step, Giannis's signature move, which we hope to see, you know, 41 games a year in Milwaukee for many, many years to come. But, and then that you'll find that, you know, plugged, on all my social media, but Twitter is the one I'm on the most. And that's just TIWINDISCH at Ty Windish. And you can find me there. So guys, thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast.
Yeah. Anytime, man. I'm sure, something tells me the Bucks will be a focus of this offseason. So we'd love to have you back on at some point.
Absolutely, man.
Absolutely. Thanks again. I'm hopefully looking forward to the next one.
Well, thanks again to Ty Windish. Please follow him on Twitter. He will be quite busy over the next few months, something tells me. We are going to turn our attention now to another team that has to confront an uncertain future. The Houston Rockets, who were unceremoniously, gentlemanly swept out of the playoffs by the Lakers in the second round. More, the big change that happened already is that Mike D'Antoni is not returning as the head coach, but it was not the Rockets' decision. D'Antoni was the one who said, nope, not interested in coming back. So let's start there. What do you think the Rockets do at head coach, and did they make a mistake not locking up D'Antoni sooner?
Well, didn't they try?
So I was reading this Kelly Iko story from The Athletic, and I was just skimming through it, but it sounds like there were some issues with Fertitta in particular.
Key Supri.
I know, yeah. So that first year, he wanted this option picked up, and then Alexander sold the team to Fertitta. Fertitta said no. Then after 2018, he again wanted it picked up. Fertitta said no, because there was some speculation about LeBron going to the team. Last year, they offered him like a one-year, $2.5 million extension, I think, which was seen as below market.
Yeah,
and so they went to his house, and they all thought he had a deal. And then D'Antoni spoke to his agent, and his agent's like, nope. And then so that broke off. So it sounds like they had the opportunity a couple times to keep him for longer, but
they just cheaped out.
Yeah. It seemed like there was some, I think D'Antoni wanted a little bit more effusive feelings from Fertitta and never really got them.
Right. Well, in that case, should they have locked him up? Yes. And one thing I want to just quickly touch on here. I don't think this was in any way Daryl Morey's doing. Just to get that out of the way. They had a very good relationship, D'Antoni and Morey.
Yeah,
so I don't think it was, I think he was definitely interested in getting that relationship, you know, continuing that relationship and that working relationship. So, and he doesn't really set the salaries necessarily. Like he's getting told from ownership, yeah, you have this amount of money you can spend on a coach. Just to get that out of the way. Yes, they should have kept him. And yes, they should have offered him more money because it's Mike D'Antoni. Of course they should have. In terms of what they're going to do now, well, I think they're going to move forward because now that they, you know, they're still hanging on to Daryl Morey, at least for the time being. So if he comes into next season as the GM, you know, I have to assume that he's still, you know, he's not shying away from Morey Ball. I have to assume that this is something he'll take to his grave. this is the hill that he's willing to die on. And I respect that. So for him, I have to assume he's going to find a coach that aligns with his beliefs in how basketball is, should be played. And he'll hire that coach and they'll move it forward and see what happens.
Yeah. So I've seen Ty Lue, Jeff Van Gundy have been mentioned among the candidates.
Can we just like the Jeff Van Gundy thing? It's like every year. It's every offseason. The guy has not been a head coach since like 1941. Like let's stop.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Oh, come on. I want to hear this actually.
If the Rockets hire Jeff Van Gundy, we don't have to listen to Jeff Van Gundy on broadcasts. So I actually really want Jeff Van Gundy to get hired.
See, I get what you're saying. I really do. And there's a part of me when you said that, I actually got a semi. But look, I don't want to sit here and actually sacrifice that vision of Daryl Morey because of that. Because honestly, I think it's bold. And even if he fails, even if the Rockets fail miserably with this complete small ball lineup, I just respect the balls. I respect the balls to go this all out and go, this is the vision that I have. This is a top tier NBA team and I'm going to implement this regardless of what people say. I love that. I think that's brave as hell. I actually just wrote about the Rockets and this thing in particular for Danish TV too, by the way. So for the Danes out there who haven't clicked in, click. But yeah, I think that's brave. I want to see how this thing goes. I don't want Jeff Van Gundy to come in and muck it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. It's going to be, if they're keeping Morey, which it sounds like they are, which is somewhat of a surprise. Just given all the drama dating back to the preseason.
Right.
You know, he has molded the roster in this vision, the small ball vision, where we are not going to have a full-time center. We're going to have PJ Tucker, 6'5" PJ Tucker playing center, and Jeff Green playing center, Robert Covington playing center. So you need to have a coach who's okay with being unconventional from the get-go, because this is not a conventional team at all. And I think... No, it's hard to imagine a coach who is better suited than D'Antoni to coach this roster. Like, I don't think Nate McMillan is, you know, I haven't seen him mentioned, but I'm just thinking of guys on the market right now, or even Billy Donovan. Like, I don't know that they're going to find a better coach than D'Antoni for this specific roster. So
no, they're not going to find someone better. I agree with you, but they can find someone who comes in and mimics that ideology. I think the most important thing is just that you find someone who shares Morey's vision, because it's so out there, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's easier said than done, honestly.
Kenny Atkins?
That might be. That's not... I mean, he comes with the question of, like, is he the right guy to take you over the top? But, I mean, he's probably a better... I feel better about him than a lot of the other names being bounced around other than Ty Lue.
Yeah. I mean, he's analytically inclined, very much so. Mm-hmm. Like, he desperately wanted the Nets to become actually the Houston of the East.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good call.
Maybe he's just the perfect guy to slot in there. And maybe under the tutelage of Morey and actually having James Harden at his disposal, that changes things. Like, having James Harden compared to Kyrie Irving, it's an upgrade.
Right. So that goes into the next question of, you know, how do the Rockets, do they need to make major changes? First of all, like, do they need to abandon small ball and get a center in this summer?
So yes and no. They need major changes, but no, they don't have to shed that idea. So here's the thing. I think this this ideology that they've implemented, this experiment, so to speak, I think it could work with the right players. I just don't think they have the right players. And I think they're a little bit older. You know, they're too old. PJ Tucker, as you talked about, you know, what, 35 years old?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eric Gordon, although he's only 31, you know, he moves like someone 38, 39. He's not quick, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Even Daniel House, who's like 26, 27 years old, moves very slowly. You know, Jeff Green is 34. They need youth. They need athleticism. They need movement. I get that they love the three, and you don't need to be athletic to shoot the three, but they also need to have guys who can run in transition, because the name of the game isn't just threes. It's threes and layups. But when it takes, you know, 50 minutes for PJ Tucker to drive from the three-point line and get to the rim, you know, that doesn't bode well. You need to have athleticism. Right. You need to have someone who can get into the heart of the defense and manufacture shots, who is not James Harden or Russell Westbrook. So, they need to do something else.
So how do they get that?
Well, I mean, if I knew that, I would be sitting in Houston right now and receiving a substantial raise from what I'm earning right now.
That's true. Well, I mean, I'm just asking because they traded away a number of picks for Russ last year.
I know. Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, you are right to hone in, especially on youth, as one of their biggest issues, because they only have two guys on the roster, like under contract full time, that are younger than 25. Mm-hmm. That's not great. Like your youth pipeline is completely gone. So, you know, Russ, I think, you know, there's going to be some speculation of like, can they get off of him?
Right.
Maybe. I mean, you know, our friend Duncan Smith pitched a Russ for Blake Griffin trade. It's going to be something like that, where it's just two bad contracts. And, you know, I think in that type of trade,
they have a big.
Yeah, but in that type of trade, like, who's giving up? Can you do Russ for Blake Griffin straight up, or does Houston need to attach something?
You know, because of the fact that Griffin's deal is shorter.
Yeah, and for less money.
Yeah, you probably have to attach something. I mean, yeah. At the end of the day, Russell Westbrook is going to pick up the player option in 2022-2023,
right,
worth over $46.5 million. So effectively, he does have 3 years remaining on his deal, mm-hmm. and at a minimum of $41 million. And he's not worth that at all. You know what? Kudos on you, by the way, because you got your Russ love in earlier this season when he was playing mm-hmm. well. And you said it as right. You said, I just need to get it in before he crumbles.
Yep.
And sure as hell, he did. But I will say this, though. He had COVID. He was out for 21 days.
Yeah.
And he also had an ankle issue. So I don't think it's fair to completely put everything on him. But his playing style does remain the same issue as it's always been. He is too emotionally elated to play sometimes. Like, he'll run off emotions. And sometimes that, or more often than not, that leads to bad decision-making. Mm-hmm. Whereas Harden is far more calculated, and I think that works in his benefit. Yeah, I think you have to live with Russ. I don't think you get off that deal, and you don't have the assets to get off of that deal, really.
Right.
My question here is, just internally, is should you lean more on Robert Covington as a scorer?
You could try.
No, just as a shooter, mind you. Yeah. I'm not asking him to put the ball on the floor and
get
to
the,
like, but
you could try. He's notoriously streaky. Like, you can try to feed him more shots, but there will be some nights where he goes 3 of 15 and you're like, oh, this was, maybe we should have just given it to Russ.
Yeah, so that's true. I'm wondering, though, if you kind of upped his 3-point attempts by 50% or something insane, right? I wonder if he gets so accustomed to shooting it just by off of volume alone
mm-hmm.
that it just sort of becomes a thing. Like Channing Frye, I believe. I think it was Channing. I might be wrong. One of those guys back in like 10 or 12 years ago who started, you know, who came in as a non-shooter but then suddenly became a high-volume 3-point shooter, basically said, well, it was just about taking them. The more I shot them, the more comfortable I got. And, you know, if I got stuck shooting three threes a game, I could be in my own head. But if I started shooting 9 or 10, I was at that volume where if I had missed a couple, it didn't even register. Mm-hmm. And I think for him, for Robert Covington, maybe that's the play. Maybe instead of him shooting 6 per game or whatever it was, up that up to 12.
Yeah, I mean, he was at 7.6 per game this year.
Oh, it was that much?
Yeah, at 31.5% shooting.
Oh, boy. All right. That's not great. I thought it was less. So he's actually up there.
Yeah. Yeah, he was third on the team Yeah. Eric Gordon was second at 8.4.
And Eric Gordon was at 8.5 attempts per game at 31. This was just, this was actually a pretty bad shooting season for the Rockets.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you could maybe chalk that up to a fluke, but, you know, Gordon missed some time and who knows, but.
Gordon hit 37% from the field. I mean, last year he didn't even break 41% overall, and you know he was a more respectable 36 from range. But like he's been declining a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If you could get off his contract right now, which I don't think you necessarily can,
right?
Do it. I mean,
yeah. I mean that's the problem, right? It's they've got Russ is again almost untradeable unless you take back an equally bad deal, but
right.
Eric Gordon is also, I mean, that's a, he just signed a 4-year extension that starts next year at, you know, he's the age of 31 already. Or is he 32 now?
I just want to make sure you and I, we crapped on that extension, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Glad. Okay. Good. Yeah. I just want to make sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's 31 turning 32 in December. That contract only goes up in value each year. You know, I think they're already probably having buyer's remorse there. And I'm not saying that's untradeable because it's, you know, less than, I think it was 4 years, 78 million or something like that, or 70, somewhere in the 70s. Or
something, yeah.
Yeah. Either way, it's not going to be easy to get out of that. And, you know, it ultimately leads to the question, which I think we're, you know, rapidly approaching in Sixers land as well, is like, is this roster so effed, like so far gone that the only way out is to trade James Harden?
You know, I'd be lying if I said I haven't had that thought. But if you do, that means you restart everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And you restart it only with the assets that you're basically getting back from Harden, because right now, otherwise, you don't have anything. Right. It's a tough one, because then we go back to what Ty said about Giannis, right? Like what gives you the best odds of winning?
Mm-hmm.
And this becomes sort of a Jimmy Butler situation back in Chicago, I think, where there's a top 10 guy. The Bulls were looking down the road and they were going, we don't want to pay him. And then they traded him for Markkanen, Dodd, and Levine. You know, Levine is doing well, but the Bulls have sucked ever since. You know, they just sucked. And the Miami Heat are in the conference finals. So it really boils down to what are the long-term consequences of trading James Harden from a wins and losses perspective. Are you just actively going down into the basement for another 5 years if you do it? I think you are, in which case you have to ask yourself, is that worth it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the counter-argument would be James Harden is under contract for 2 more years. He's at 41.3 next year and 44.3 the year after that. He also has a $47.4 million player option in 2022-23. If the Rockets haven't made considerable strides by then, you know, does he start to get a wandering eye? Does he want to go somewhere else? Maybe not. I mean, maybe he likes, you know, just being the center of attention in Houston and, you know, is fine cashing $47 million for 1 year of playing basketball. I wouldn't totally blame him for that. But, you know, we're only 2 years away from him possibly becoming a free agent.
But does that matter? He's got to be 33 at that point.
I would imagine, you know, he'd still be in pretty high demand.
Of course. But as an organization, knowing full well that he's going to be 33 at that point, are you kind of okay with then just running it back for the next couple of years, even though it might agitate him?
Oh, I
just going, you know what, we'll see what we do. And then if he picks up his option, okay, then we have him until he's 34. And then he can leave because, you know, we don't have any control over his contract. And then it's okay. Then we rebuild from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, are you willing to lose him for nothing in a couple of years if that's what ends up happening?
I mean, at that age, I wouldn't worry as much as I would a guy like Giannis.
Yeah.
Like, who out there at age 34, you know, has another 7 good years in them outside of LeBron?
Right. Well, it's more you know, yes, if you would rather him walk probably than give him another max, like a 5-year max at that age, but but you know, can you afford losing him for nothing when you could? I'm not saying they should definitely trade him this offseason, but I'm saying like they could trade him anytime in the next 2 years and get a sizable haul in return, most likely.
Right.
You know, you just, it, and this is the thing with any player, like that you have to weigh at all times. It's like, you know, they are free to leave at a certain point. And if you are not, if you aren't able to build a championship contender around them, are they going to start looking around elsewhere? And if so, can you run the risk of, okay, 2022, he turns out an option, he walks out, we get nothing in return for him, and we're left with what?
Yeah. I mean, and it's a reasonable concern. I just think given the contractual certainty that he has right now, as well as the age, I wouldn't put too much priority on looking ahead down the road. Like, he's 31 already. I would just basically squeeze out the years that he has left in his prime. And then if he has a year or two left in his prime after the contract expires and someone else benefits from that, I'll live with it. I'll live with it. Like, he's still going to be one of the best Rockets players of all time. You know, he's 8 seasons in. So what? That's going to be at least 10-year. Then he's probably going to have somewhere between 10 and 11-year Rockets career. Like, okay, that's a long-ass window, and they just didn't get it done. And maybe not, at least. Fine. I think they gave it a valiant effort. I'm not going to look back at that Rockets era and go, oh, that was a huge failure.
No.
Like, no, I mean, to be honest, they were never that talented outside of James.
Yeah. Well, I agree that this should not be seen. However the James Harden era ends, I'm not saying it's going to end this offseason, but I would agree that it should not be, it should be held in high regard. Like, this was a legitimate championship contending team for multiple years, just ran into some unfortunate luck and a dynasty in Golden State in the playoffs. It's just, I mean, it's a really tricky spot for the Rockets to be in moving forward. And I tend to agree with you, you know, you can, I don't know what you do this off season. Cause you know, if Fertitta is not willing to pay the luxury tax, they're already bumping against the tax line, I believe.
Yeah.
And if you don't add to this roster, I think they would have to actively subtract from the roster to dodge the tax this year.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if that's the case, then James Harden probably does start to be like, hey, you know, I watched some of these other teams that are willing to pay the tax and like surround, you know, bolster a supporting cast. If my, you know, if the guy in charge of my team isn't willing to do so, do I have a chance to actually win here? So yeah. if that's the case, then, you know, maybe he does start to think about his future elsewhere, but I could see running it back next year, see if a new coach does anything, and then reevaluate your future in 2021. Because I think ultimately that's probably the play for any team with a star that they would even entertain the idea of trading. You know, 2021, if Giannis becomes a free agent, LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George, all these guys, Rudy Gobert, Victor Oladipo, if any of those guys say, pull what Kawhi did last year and say, I will come sign with you if you can trade for another star. Mm-hmm. Then you can get the Paul George package that OKC got, where you ultimately get what should be the return for two superstars just for trading one guy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be, the Rockets will be another fun team to watch this offseason, but let's now more turn to the playoffs, because not only do we have game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight, we also have perhaps the most unexpected game 7 of the playoffs. Clippers, Nuggets. The Clippers were up 3-1. They have choked away two massive leads in games 5 and 6. What is your read on this series? Like, I have zero feel for this series anymore.
Nope. I me neither. All I know is that the Nuggets are entertaining as hell, and they have for 2 years straight, they've been a must-see TV when it comes to the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
Their resilience level is just outstanding. So earlier today on the football comedy podcast, I said, you know, the Clippers are going to win the championship because they asked me. So I'm sweating already.
Yeah.
We're 6 hours from tip off and I'm sweating. I have no idea. You know, game sevens, that's the ultimate, you don't know what in the hell is going to happen kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just such a weird beast to attack because it's one run that goes wrong for the other team, and that's game over. We saw it in game six, right? With the Clippers in the third quarter. Like, they just went into one of their lulls, and the Nuggets were like, oh, you're not showing up for the next 10 minutes? Okay. We'll completely destroy you in that time. That's fine. Yeah. That's cool. If you open that door for us, we're not going to stand there and try to close it again. We'll rock straight in. So for the Clippers, this is all about not going into these mental lapses.
Yeah. And you know, Paul George came out after the game, after game six, and basically said as much. He's like, this is still our series to lose. Like, we just need to avoid kind of these letdowns that we've had the past two games in the second half. So are there adjustments that you'd like to see the Clippers make, or do you really think this is just like stay mentally locked in for 48 minutes and don't take this team lightly?
Well, two, I think that's just a necessity regardless. Mm-hmm. If they were to make a change, I've been screwing around with this one just because I think it's interesting. But again, you know, when we talk about putting certain guys on certain players, you know, you're just going to go into screen and roll action and create a switch.
Sure.
So you can't really have that one guy who just goes on one player all the time. But I would be interested in seeing Kawhi just guard Jokic as much as he can all game long. Just regardless, even if it's on a switch, like Kawhi should just yell, re-switch, and then go back on him. I want Kawhi to just eat Nikola Jokic. If Jokic right now is 230 pounds, by the end of the game, he should be 190 because Kawhi should just eat him up. That's what I want to see. That could be interesting. Outside of that, I'm not really sure. I think the Clippers have a generally good handle on most of the Nuggets players. It's just they haven't found the solution for Jokic. And what the hell is up with Montrezl Harrell? Like, he is not playing to the level that he used to be. He's not aggressive on the boards. Offensively, he's a little bit, I don't know if timid is the right word, but he's definitely not as aggressive as he used to be. Like, Ivica Zubac has played better, and significantly so.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if part of it is just like he's not in rhythm because he missed some time early in the bubble. I mean, you know, I don't want to speculate about anything regarding his mental health right now, but like his grandmother, who he was clearly close with, passed away, you know, back a few months ago.
Oh,
and
see, now I feel like an ass because I'd forgotten about that.
Well, you know, and I don't want to, say
everything I just said back though. That's well, fair.
That I mean, I don't want to say that's definitely the reason, you know, I'm just saying, no, like,
it could be.
Yeah. It, you know, I think that is something that we always need to be mindful of, especially in this bubble. It's just like mental health challenges could explain, you know, it was the same thing with Paul George in that first series, you know, the Dallas series, where it was like, oh, pandemic P is choking in the playoffs again. And he's like, no, actually I've been super depressed and like needed counseling and my teammates to pull me out of this funk.
Yes. Thank you for making me feel worse, Brian, for what about. Yeah. That's no, you're right. You're absolutely right. And look, had I remembered that that had been the case, that would have been the one explanation I would have gone to immediately. So that's on me.
But I mean, about that. I do think this is just a bad matchup for him. I think, you know, the Nuggets having the size of both Jokic and Plumlee kind of negates some of that small ball energy that Montrez brings. And it makes me wonder if they should even consider downsizing more and doing some combination, you know, have Kawhi, George, Morris as their front court. I don't care who's the nominal center. You have zero rim protection, but you're going to be five out. So you're going to force Jokic and Plumlee into some difficult situations. Because, you know, Montrez, as good as he is, he's still a traditional big. You're not going to, he's not any threat from more than 10 feet away from the basket or so. If you have five shooters out on the floor, that might stretch the Nuggets defensively to a breaking point. Although again, on the other end of the floor, I guess your solution of Kawhi guards Jokic might be the only way to stop Denver from just absolutely pounding it down in the post every possession.
I think that would be one way to just do it. That's just one possible solution. I don't necessarily agree with going small, even though I do agree that you should see it in spurts, but Subac is legitimately good defensively.
Yeah. I'm not saying the whole game, just some lineup at some point just to throw him off balance.
Right. So we're sitting here and we're screwing around with all these kinds of ideas. Are we just completely oblivious to the fact that this is one of those games where Kawhi is like, I just got this.
No.
screw everything you just said. It doesn't even matter because as soon as the ball is tipped off, I'm Kawhi Leonard and I'm going to be doing Kawhi Leonard things.
I am very much not oblivious to what Kawhi Leonard does in game sevens. No.
I wasn't even trying to bait you on that one, I promise.
It is still scorched into my brain from now until the end of time.
Yeah, that is true. No, but I mean, he's... I'm going to say, he's been better this year than he actually was last year. He's... All right, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to go out on this limb. He's playing Michael Jordan caliber basketball, right?
Wow, there it is.
I'm not trying to be a hot take. I'm really not. He's controlling the game. I realize that you're in a game seven situation and that's not optimal. And I realized that quite often it was very rare that Michael found himself in that situation. But again, situation, teammate, everything changes. But I think in terms of individual performance, Kawhi right now is there. Consistently so, but he's having that same kind of influence on a game.
I mean,
am I completely crazy?
Well, no, I was about to say he's had one bad game in the playoffs so far.
Let me look that up. I seem to recall he at least had a couple. He had the one game, game two against the Nuggets, Denver. That was pretty atrocious.
He was 13.4. 4 of 17 shooting, but I mean, otherwise he's been pretty just steadily fantastic on both ends of the floor throughout the playoffs.
I don't remember which game it was. No, I thought he had a bad game against Dallas. He didn't at all. Actually, the lowest scoring game he had was 29.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Yeah. He was averaging. See, here's the thing. He was averaging almost 33 points and 10 rebounds per game against Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And here against the Nuggets, he's cooled down a little bit. He's at 26-9, but I mean, he seems to be playing bigger in the playoffs. Like, he's always near that double digit rebounding, and in the regular season, he's more like 6-7 a game. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not really worried about it because I'm Kawhi Leonard. I'll just do whatever. It's just intriguing and interesting to me that when the playoffs roll around, he's just like, oh, all you guys with your 82 game, 16 game debates, I got this. I'm not going to speak. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to go out there and dominate. I'm so hard pressed to look at that guy right now and bet against him.
Well, especially, I'm looking back at his game log last year, and this speaks to your point about a game seven. The first few rounds of the playoffs last year, he had, again, one bad game against Orlando, but otherwise was pretty steadily consistent throughout the playoffs. And then, but his high in terms of field goal attempts prior to game seven was 24, and that was game two against the Sixers. Game seven, he attempted 39 shots. He did not attempt more than 26 in the rest of the playoffs. So that was just his FU. I am not losing. I will do whatever it takes. I am not losing this game.
Yeah.
Right now, going into game seven, he has not attempted more than 24 shots in the game. I'm expecting at least 30 to 35 tonight.
You know what? I was actually planning on, setting the alarm for somewhat early tomorrow, after the game had been played, so I would catch it. But I actually think after we're done podcasting, I'm just gonna hit the hit the bed and then set an alarm for tonight. I think I have to watch this one live. This could be an all-timer.
It very well could be. So what's your prediction for this game? Who's walking out to meet the Lakers?
Well, I think it's got to be the Clippers at this point. I said as much as one podcast, I have to stay consistent because I do believe that they're the better team as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not trying to downplay the Nuggets. And I think, you know, Mike Malone was right. Like, he came out, was it after the game, and said, you're talking about us as if we're this cute little story. We're actually one of the best teams in the West. I think that was a completely valid point. And I'm definitely not trying to undermine and downplay what the Nuggets have done this year in the playoffs. They've been outstanding. So, and this is a game seven, everything can happen, but I put my faith here in Kawhi. I think he's that good. I think when the game is on the line, he's one of those guys who can get it done.
Yeah, totally. Totally agree. I mean, I've been on the Clippers since the preseason as my title pick. I'm more shaky on that than ever just because of what's happened in these last two games. Like,
yeah,
there's a very real chance that they are knocked out of the playoffs tonight, and that scares me. I will go down swinging with them, and I will also pick the Clippers, but this is the least confident I have felt about their title chances all year. Because, you know, the Lakers have undeniably been playing, like, they handled the Rockets with ease after that first game. And, you know, I think the NBA clearly would like to see a Clippers-Lakers. That's going to be a ratings bonanza if it does come to pass. But, you know, I thought the Clippers all year would pose more of a matchup challenge for the Lakers than vice versa. But, you know, if Anthony Davis is really willing to slide to the five for that whole series, LeBron's playing the four, they get playoff Rondo. I don't know. I mean, I'm a little worried about the Clippers, but let's focus on tonight. Then we can, you know, look ahead to the conference finals.
I'm not too nervous because, you know, playoff Rondo is going up against Pat Beverly.
Yeah.
So, you know, playoff Rondo will be dead. That
is a fair point. That is a very fair point. Well, hope y'all enjoy the start of the conference finals in this game seven. We hope it's not as bad as that Denver-Utah game was. Let's get some game seven fireworks like what we saw in Raptors-Celtics. But we will be back probably later this week to talk the start of the conference finals and whatever other NBA news comes out between now and then. And so in the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, any movie reviews?
No, not this time around. I've been so, so busy. Let me just go check because see, the thing is, I've actually started to realize I'm just cobbling off my brain at night because I've been so busy. And for some reason, I'm turning on the TV. I'm like kind of forgetting things. So let me just make sure that you're up to speed. Yes. Actually, there is one. There is one that I've seen recently. It's an old timer. It's Hudson Hawk from 1991.
Oh.
With Bruce Willis. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I have not.
No, don't. That is unequivocally one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Oh, good. Okay.
And I found out why. Bruce Willis wrote it.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was basically a Bruce Willis love fest created by Bruce Willis. And it just, it was ghastly. At one point I had to get up to pee, and usually I pause the damn film when I go up to pee. And this was like, no. No, just let it run. It's okay.
Great.
So, yeah, that's my movie review. I gave it a 2 out of 10. The only reason I gave it 2 was because Andy McDowell was in it, and she actually played pretty well.
Well, I am continuing my trend of being very late to popular things. I started watching The Boys, that Amazon show about the superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's I'm very hooked, and I'm begrudgingly not going to watch more of it tonight to watch basketball instead, but I'm planning on plowing through the remaining. I think I'm episode 4 already. So
nice. I have not seen a second of it. I've heard great things, but I'm just so behind. There's so many shows now. And by the way, today Disney Plus finally launched in Denmark.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. So we finally have a couple of shows. Like I've been avoiding as many spoilers from the Mandalorian as possible.
Oh yeah, that is what I did watch right away. That is actually genuinely
I know
great.
And look, I'm still pissed off at Disney because there are certain things I do know already, because you know the entire internet started flooding over with Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, thank you.
I mean, that's not too much of a spoiler, thankfully.
No, but I you know, you catch my drift. Like, yes, this was always a bad plan by Disney, like opening it up in one market, because you know, I know a lot of Danes who are like, you know what? That's just, I'm not going to make Disney Plus a priority, because if they're not going to make me a priority, and they damn well know that all the plot points are going to be released online and people are going to be talking about it ad nauseum, you know, why should I support you? So I think they screwed themselves pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, go watch The Boys. Don't watch that terrible Bruce Willis movie. Actually, go watch basketball tonight, because we got...
Yes.
Which should be...
That's priority numero uno.
Should be a great slate. And hope you all stay safe out there. Catch you later, Mort.
Later, Bri. Don't die, man.